have different color hair?
The old man just shook his head sadly and pulled on Vanechka's collar. He was busy studying the bodies and did not want to be lifted up from his squatting position.
I see that our typographical machine still works,
Mikhail Porfirovich said sadly, and he moved on. The travelers went on more slowly. After 2 minutes, they saw the words 300 meters had been painted on the walls in red paint.
300 meters to go,
Artyom said, listening uneasily to the echoes of a dog's barking in the distance. About 100 meters from the station, they were struck by a bright light, and they stopped.
Hands above your head, stand still,
a voice roared through a loudspeaker. Artyom obediently put his hands at the back of his head, and Mikhail Porfirovich thrust both his hands into the air.
I said everyone hands up. Walk slowly forward. Don't make any sudden movements.
The strained voice continued, and Artyom couldn't look to see who was speaking because the light was beating right into his eyes and it was too painful to do anything but look down. Walking with small steps for some distance, they again stood still when they were told, and the searchlight was finally turned to the side. There was a whole barricade erected there, and there were 2 machine gunners in position and another guy with a holster in his belt, and they were all dressed in camouflage with black berets on their shaved heads. They had white armbands with something looking like a German swastika on them, but with 3 points, not 4. There were some barely visible dark figures in the distance, and there was a nervously fidgeting dog by their feet. The surrounding walls were painted with crosses, eagles, slogans, and curses aimed at non-Russians. They puzzled Artyom somewhat because they were partly in German. In a visible place, underneath a panel with the silhouette of an eagle on it and a 3-pronged swastika, there was that sign again lit from underneath, the one with the unfortunate little black figure, and Artyom thought that it was being displayed like some sort of religious icon for them. One of the guards made a step forward and lit a long torch, holding it at head level. He slowly walked around the 3 of them, steadily looking into their faces, apparently trying to find some evidence of non-Slavic features. However, they all looked Russian, and he turned his torch away and shrugged his shoulders, disappointed.
Documents,
he demanded. Artyom readily extended his passport. Mikhail Porfirovich rummaged in his pocket and finally found his.
And where are your documents for this one?
The older guard asked, nodding at Vanechka in disgust.
You see, the thing is that the boy,
the old man started to explain.
Silence! You will address me as officer! Answer the question precisely!
The document checker barked at him and his torch jumped around in his hands.
Officer, you see the boy is sick. He doesn't have a passport. He's just little, you see, but look, he's assigned to me here, I'll show you.
Mikhail Porfirovich began to babble, looking at the officer ingratiatingly, trying to find a spark of sympathy in his eyes. But the man stood still, straight and stiff like a rock, and his face was like stone, and Artyom again felt that he wanted to kill someone.
Where's the photograph?
The officer spat, having flipped through the pages. Vanechka, who had been standing quietly until that point, tensely watching the dog's silhouette and enthusiastically gurgling from time to time, now turned to the document checker, and to Artyom's horror, he bared his teeth and hooted meanly. Artyom was suddenly so scared for him that he forgot his own hostility toward the man and his desire to kick him good and properly. The document checker took an involuntary step backwards, staring at Vanechka unkindly, and said,
"Get rid of this immediately, or I'll do it myself."
"Please forgive him, officer. He doesn't understand what he's doing."
Artyom was surprised to hear his own voice pronounce. Mikhail Porfirovich looked at him with gratitude, and the document checker quickly rustled through Artyom's passport and returned it to him, saying coldly,
"No questions for you, you can pass."
Artyom made a few steps forward and froze, feeling that his legs wouldn't obey him. The officer turned away from him and repeated his question to the other 2 about the photograph.
"You see, the thing is..."
Mikhail Porfirovich started, and stumbling, he added,
"Officer, the thing is that there's no photographer where we live, and it costs a lot to get them at other stations, and I just don't have the money to get a picture." "Take off your clothes,"
the man interrupted him.
"I'm sorry."
Mikhail Porfirovich's voice quavered, and his legs started to tremble. Artyom took off his rucksack and put it on the floor, not thinking at all about what he was doing. There are some things that you don't want to do, and you pledge to yourself that you won't do, you forbid yourself, and then suddenly they happen all by themselves. You don't even have time to think about them, and they don't make it to the cognitive centers of the brain, they just happen, and that's it, and you're left just watching yourself with surprise and convincing yourself that it wasn't your fault, it just happened all by itself. If they undressed them and led them like the others to the 300th meter, Artyom would get his machine gun out of his rucksack, would switch it to automatic fire, and would take out as many of these camouflage non-humans as he could, until they shot him down. Nothing else made any sense. It wasn't important that he had only known Mikhail and Vanechka for a day. It wasn't important that they would kill him. What would happen to Verienka, there was no point in thinking what would happen afterwards. There are things that it's just simpler not to think about.
Andres, the man articulated carefully, repeating himself. A search.
But if you please,
Mikhail Porfirovich uttered indistinctly.
Silence, the man barked. Quickly.
And he reinforced his words with a gesture by taking his gun out of its holster. The old man started to unbutton his jacket hastily, and the document checker turned his pistol away and silently watched how the old man threw off his jersey, clumsily hopping on one foot to take off his boots and swaying, trying to undo his belt buckle.
Faster!
The officer hissed rapidly.
I'm clumsy! You see...
Mikhail Porfirovich started, but the document checker had finally had enough and smacked the old man in the teeth. Artyom rushed forward, but two strong arms grabbed him from behind, and as much as he tried to extract himself from them, it was useless. And then something unforeseeable happened. Vanechka, who was about half the size of the thug in the black beret, suddenly bared his teeth, and with an animal roar, he rushed at him. The man didn't expect such speed from the wretched boy, and Vanechka managed to grab his left hand and even to hit him in the chest. However, a second later, the officer recovered and flung Vanechka off, took a step backwards, held out his hand holding the pistol, and pulled the trigger. The shot, amplified by its echo in the tunnel, resounded in their ears, but Artyom thought he could still hear how Vanechka sobbed silently and sat down on the floor. He was leaning over, clutching both hands to his stomach, when the officer kicked him and, with a disgusted expression on his face, pulled the trigger again, aiming at the head.
I warned you.
He threw a cold look at Mikhail Porfirovich, who was frozen in place, looking at Vanechka with his jaw dropped and rattling sounds coming from his chest. At that moment everything went dark in front of Artyom's eyes, and he felt such strength inside of him that the soldiers holding him from behind almost fell to the floor when he rushed forward. Time stretched for Artyom, and he had enough of it to seize the handle of his machine gun, and clicking the safety lock, he fired a round right through the rucksack into the breast of the officer. He noticed with satisfaction the black line of dots on the green of the camouflage. Chapter 9. Du stirbst.
To be hanged,
the commandant concluded. There was a burst of applause which mercilessly tormented his eardrums. Artyom raised his head with difficulty and looked from side to side. Only one of his eyes could open, the other was totally swollen. The interrogators had tortured him with all their might. He couldn't hear very well either. It was as though sounds were making their way to him through a thick layer of cotton wool. It felt like his teeth were all still in place, but what would he need his teeth for now anyway? Again, the same light-colored marble, the normal stuff. And this white marble was already setting his teeth on edge. Massive iron chandeliers on the ceiling, once probably electrical fixtures. Now, there were lard candles in them, and the ceiling above them was completely black. There were only two such chandeliers burning in the whole station, one at the very end where a wide staircase stood, and the other where Artyom was standing in the middle of the hall. on the steps of a little bridge that connected to a side passage that led to another metro line. Frequent semicircular arches, almost completely unnoticeable columns, there was a lot of free space. What kind of station is this?
The execution will take place tomorrow at 5 o'clock in the morning at Tverskaya Station,
the fat man who was standing next to the commandant specified. Like his superior, he was dressed not in green camouflage, but in a black uniform with brilliant yellow buttons. There were black berets on both of them, but not as big or as crudely made as those on the soldiers in the tunnel. There were lots of depictions of eagles and the three-pronged swastika and slogans and mottos drawn with great care in Gothic letters. Diligently trying to focus on the blurred words, Artyom read, "The metro is for Russians, swarthy people to the surface, death to rat-eaters." There were others, too, with more abstract contents, "March forward to the last battle for the greatness of the Russian spirit. With fire and sword we will establish true Russian order." Then there was something from Hitler, "A healthy body means a healthy spirit." There was one inscription that especially made an impression on him. It was underneath a skillfully drawn portrait of a brave soldier with a powerful jaw and a strong chin, and a rather resolute-looking woman. They were depicted in profile so that the man was shielding the woman. "Each man is a soldier, and each woman is the mother of a soldier," the slogan went. All these inscriptions and pictures had somehow absorbed more of Artyom's attention than the words of the commandant. Right in front of him, behind a cordon, the crowd was restless. There weren't many people here, and they were all dressed rather blandly and basically in quilted jackets and greasy overalls. There were hardly any women to be seen, and if this reflected reality, there wouldn't be many more soldiers in the future. Artyom's head fell to his chest. He hadn't the strength to hold it upright anymore, and if there hadn't been two broad-shouldered escorts in berets supporting him under the arms, he would have fallen already. He felt faint again, and his head had begun to spin, and he couldn't manage to say anything ironic. Artyom had the impression that they would now turn him inside out in front of all these people. A stupid indifference about what would happen to him gradually crept up on Artyom. Now he only had an abstract interest in what was surrounding him, as though none of this was happening to him, but he was just reading a book about it. The fate of the main character interested him, of course, but if he was killed, then he could just pick another book off the shelf, one with a happy ending. At first, he had been carefully beaten at length by patient and strong people, while others asked him clever and judicious questions. The room had been predictably covered with disturbing yellow-colored tiles, making it easy to wipe away blood, but it was impossible to get rid of its smell. To start off with, they taught him to call the gaunt man with slick, light hair and delicate features, who is leading the interrogation, "Commandant." Then they taught him not to ask questions, but to answer them. Then they taught him to answer the questions accurately and to the point. Artyom couldn't understand how his teeth were still in his mouth, though a few of them were seriously wobbly, and his mouth had a constant taste of blood in it. At first, he tried to justify himself, but it was explained to him that that wasn't worth it. Then he tried to stay silent, but he was quickly convinced that this, too, seemed to be the wrong thing to do. It was very painful. It is altogether a strange feeling when a strong man beats you over the head. It's not just pain, but some kind of hurricane which wipes all the thought from your mind and smashes your feelings to pieces. The real torture happens afterwards. After a while, Artyom finally understood what he needed to do. It was simple. He needed to manage the expectations of the commandant the best way he could. If the commandant asked whether Artyom was sent by Kuznetsky Most, he had to just affirm that with a nod. It took less strength, and the commandant didn't wrinkle his Slavic nose at the response, and his assistants didn't hit him. The commandant assumed that Artyom was sent with the aim of collecting military information and performing some kind of sabotage. He agreed again with a nod, and then the torturer rubbed his hands together with satisfaction, and Artyom had saved his second eye. But it was important not just to nod. He had to listen to exactly what the commandant had asked, because if Artyom assented inattentively, the mood would worsen and one of his helpers would try, for example, to break one of Artyom's ribs. After about an hour and a half of this unrushed conversation, Artyom couldn't feel his body anymore. He couldn't see very well, he could scarcely hear, and he understood almost nothing. He lost consciousness a few times, but they brought him back to his senses with iced water and ammonia. He must have been a very interesting person to talk to. In the end, they had an absolutely false idea of who he was. They saw him as an enemy spy and a saboteur who had appeared in order to stab the Fourth Reich in the back, and having decapitated the leadership to sow the seeds of chaos and to prepare for an invasion. The ultimate goal was the establishment of an anti-national Caucasian Zionist regime over the whole of the metro system. Though Artyom generally understood little about politics, such a global aim seemed to him to be worthy, and so he told them that was true too. And it was good that he had agreed. Because of this, he still had all his teeth. After the final details of the plot were revealed, they allowed Artyom to pass out. When he could open his eye one last time, the commandant was already reading the sentence. The final formalities had barely been settled when the date of his departure from this world was announced to the public. And they pulled a black hood over his head and face, and his vision worsened dramatically. He could see nothing, and he was even more dizzy. He barely managed to stay standing for a minute and stopped struggling when a spasm seized his body, and he vomited right onto his boots. The guard took a cautious step backwards, and the public rustled indignantly. For a moment, Artyom felt ashamed, and then he felt his head swimming and his knees buckling. A strong arm was holding up his chin, and he heard a familiar voice which now seemed almost to come from a dream world.
"Let's go. Come with me, Artyom. It's all over. Get up," he said.
But Artyom still couldn't find the strength to get up or even to lift his head. It was very dark, probably because of the hood. But how would he get it off if his hands were tied at the back? Getting it off was essential, to look to see if it was indeed the person he thought it was, or if he was imagining it.
"The hood,"
Artyom managed to say, hoping the person would understand. The black veil that had been over his eyes then disappeared, and Artyom saw Hunter in front of him. He hadn't changed at all since the time Artyom had talked with him, a while back now, a whole eternity ago at Vedienka. How had he got here? Artyom wearily moved his head and looked around. He was on the platform of the exact same station where they had read his sentence. There were dead bodies everywhere. Only a few candles in one chandelier continued to smoke. The other chandelier was blown out. Hunter was holding the same pistol in his right hand that had so amazed Artyom the last time, having seemed so huge with its long silencer screwed onto its barrel and its impressive laser sight. "A Stechkin." The hunter was looking at Artyom anxiously and attentively.
"Is everything okay with you? Can you walk?"
"Yes, probably."
Artyom summoned his courage, but he was interested in something else at that moment.
"You're alive. Did everything work out for you?"
"As you can see,"
Hunter smiled wearily.
"Thanks for your help."
"But I didn't complete the task."
Artyom shook his head, and it was burningly painful, and he was filled with shame.
"You did everything you could."
Hunter patted him soothingly on the shoulder.
"And what's happening at home at Vedienka?"
"Everything's fine, Artyom. Everything has already passed. I was able to collapse the entrance, and now the Dark Ones won't be able to get into the metro anymore. We're saved. Let's go."
"And what happened here?"
Artyom looked around, noticing with horror that the whole hall was filled with corpses, and that other than his voice and Hunter's, not another sound could be heard.
"It doesn't matter."
Hunter looked into his eyes firmly.
"You shouldn't worry about it."
He bent over and lifted his sack from the floor. A smoking army hand machine gun was lying in it. His cartridge belt was almost spent. The hunter moved forward, and Artyom tried to keep step. Looking from side to side, he saw something that he hadn't noticed before. Several dark figures were hanging from the little bridge where Artyom had had his sentence read. Hunter said nothing and was taking long steps as though he had forgotten that Artyom could barely move. As much as Artyom tried, the distance between them was increasing all the time, and Artyom was afraid that Hunter would just go off, leaving him in this horrible station which was covered in slippery and still warm blood, and where the only inhabitants were corpses. "Do I really deserve this?" Artyom thought. "Is my life so much more important than the lives of all these people?" No, he was glad to have been rescued, but all these people, randomly scattered like bags and rags on the granite of the platform, side by side, on the rails, left forever in the poses that Hunter's bullets had found them in. They all died so that he could live. Hunter had made this exchange with such ease, just as though he had sacrificed some minor chess figures to safeguard one of the most important pieces. He was just a player, and the Metro was a chessboard, and all the figures were his because he was playing the game with himself. But here was the question. Was Artyom such an important piece to the game that all these people had to perish for his preservation? Henceforth, the blood that was flowing along the cold granite would probably pulse in his veins, too. It was like he had drunk it, extracted it from others for his existence. Now he would never be warm again. Artyom, with effort, ran forward a bit in order to catch up with Hunter and to ask if he would ever become warm again, or would he, even at the hottest firesides, stay this cold and melancholic, like an icy winter's night on a far-flung semi-station. But Hunter was far in the distance. Maybe it was because Artyom didn't manage to catch him up that Hunter descended onto the tracks and rushed into the tunnel with the agility of an animal. His movements seemed to Artyom like the movements of a dog? No, a rat. Oh, God. Are you a rat? The terrible idea tore from Artyom's mouth, and he was frightened by what he'd said.
No, came the answer. You're the rat. You're the rat. Cowardly rat. Cowardly rat.
Someone repeated it just above his ear and spat fruitily. Artyom shook his head, but immediately regretted it. Now, thanks to his sharp movements, the aching blunt pain in his body had exploded. He lost control of his limbs and started to stumble forward, and then he rested his burning forehead on something cool and metallic. The surface was ribbed, and it pressed on his skin unpleasantly, but it cooled his inflamed flesh, and Artyom froze in that position for a time, not having the strength to make any further decisions. He caught his breath, and then carefully tried to open his left eye a little bit. He sat on the floor, his forehead against a lattice of some sort. It went up to the ceiling and filled the space on both sides of the low and narrow arch. He was facing the hall, and there were paths behind him. All the nearest arches opposite him, as far as he could see, were turned into cages, too. There were a few people sitting in each of them. This station was exactly the opposite of the station where he had been sentenced to death. That one was utterly graceful, light, airy, spacious, with transparent columns, wide and high arches, despite the gloomy lighting and the inscriptions and drawings covering the walls. It was like a banquet hall compared with this one. Here everything was oppressive and scary. There was a low, rounded ceiling like in the tunnels. It was barely twice a man's height, and there were massive, rough columns, each of which were much wider than the arches that cut across between them. The ceiling of the arches was so close to the ground that he could have reached up and touched it, were it not for the fact that his hands were tied with wire behind his back. Apart from Artyom, there were another two people in the cell. One was lying on the ground with his face buried in a heap of rags, and he was groaning dully. The other had black eyes and brown hair and hadn't shaved for some time, and he was squatting, leaning against the marble wall, watching Artyom with lively curiosity. There were two strong men in camouflage and berets patrolling the length of the cages, one of whom had a big dog on a leash, and he would scold it from time to time. They, it seemed, had woken Artyom. It had been a dream. It had been a dream. He had dreamt it all. They were going to hang him.
What time is it?
He muttered, only slightly moving his inflamed tongue and looking sideways at the black-eyed man.
Hoppus nein,
the man answered, willingly pronouncing his words with the same accent that Artyom had heard at Kitai-Gorod. Instead of A, they said O, and instead of Y, they said A. And then he added,
in the evening.
9:30. 2.5 hours until 12, and 5 hours before the procedure. 7.5 hours. And while he was thinking, counting, time was already flying past. Once Artyom had tried to imagine what should a person feel and think in the face of death, the night before his execution. Fear, hatred for his executioners, regret. But he was empty inside. His heart was thumping hard in his breast, his temples were throbbing, blood slowly accumulated in his mouth until he swallowed. The blood had the taste of rusty iron. Or was it that wet iron had the taste of fresh blood? They would hang him. They would kill him. He would cease to exist. He couldn't imagine it, couldn't take it on board. Everyone knows that death is unavoidable. Death was part of daily life in the Metro, but it always seemed that nothing unfortunate would happen to you, that the bullets would fly past you, the disease would skip over you. Death of old age was a slow affair, so you needn't think about it. You can't live in constant awareness of your mortality. You had to forget about it. And though these thoughts came to you anyway, you had to drive them away, to smother them. Otherwise they would take root in your consciousness, and they would make your life a misery. You can't think about the fact that you'll die. Otherwise you might go mad. There's only one thing that can save a man from madness, and that's uncertainty. The life of someone who has been sentenced to death is different from the life of a normal person in only one way. The one knows exactly when he will die, and the regular person is in the dark about it, and consequently it seems he can live forever, even though it's entirely possible that he could be killed in a catastrophic event the following day. Death isn't frightening by itself. What's frightening is expecting it. In 7 hours. How would they do it? Artyom couldn't really imagine how people were hanged. They once had to execute a traitor at their station, but Artyom was still little then and didn't understand much, and anyway, they wouldn't perform public executions at Vedienka. They would probably throw a rope around his neck. Either they'd string him up to the ceiling, or there would be some sort of stool involved. No, it didn't bear thinking about. He was thirsty. With effort, he flicked the switch, and the train of his thoughts swept onto other rails, to the officer he had shot, the first person he'd ever killed. The scene arose before his eyes again. Invisible bullets going into his broad chest, and how they had left burnt black marks in which fresh blood had coagulated. He didn't feel the slightest regret for what he'd done, and this surprised him. Once he had reckoned that every killed person must be a heavy burden on the conscience of the person who killed them. They would appear in dreams, disturb his old age. But no, it seemed it wasn't like that at all. There was no pity, no repentance, only gloomy satisfaction. And Artyom understood that if the murdered person were to come to him in a nightmare, then he would only turn indifferently away from the phantom, and it would then disappear without a trace. But old age? There would be no old age anymore. Time was running out. It would probably involve a stool. When there is so little time, you have to think about something important. About the most important thing that you never found time to think about before, leaving it all till later, about the fact that your life wasn't lived right, and that you'd do it differently if given a second chance. No, he couldn't have had any other life in this world, and there was nothing to try to redo. When the border guard shot Vanechka in the head, should he not have rushed for his automatic machine gun, but instead have stayed standing at the side? It wouldn't have worked. He would never have managed to chase Vanechka and Mikhail Porfirovich from his dreams. What had happened to the old man? Damn, what would it take to get a mouthful of water? First, they would lead him out of the cell. And if he was lucky, then they'd lead him through the transfer passage. But there'd be little time for that now. And if they didn't put that damned cover over his head, he would be able to see something, apart from the rods of the lattice in front of him, and the endless rows of cages.
"What station you from?"
said Artyom through dry lips, tearing himself away from the lattice and looking up into the eyes of his neighbor.
"Tverskaya,"
the man responded. Then he asked,
"Listen, brother, what are you in here for?"
"I killed an officer,"
Artyom slowly replied. It was hard for him to speak.
"Uh-huh,"
the unshaved man offered sympathetically.
"So they're going to hang you?"
Artyom shrugged, and turned again to lean on the lattice.
"Sure they will,"
his neighbor assured him. "They will. And soon. Right here at the station. And they won't be transferring him. If only to get a drink of water. To wash this metallic taste from his mouth, to moisten his dry throat, then maybe he could speak to this man for a little more than a minute. There was no water in the cage, but on the other side of the space there was a fetid tin bucket. Could he ask his jailers? Maybe they give small indulgences to those who have been sentenced. If he could only have pushed his hand out through the lattice and wave it a little. But his hands were tied behind his back and the wire was digging into his wrists, and he had lost all sensation. He tried to cry out, but only a rattle emerged, which turned into a cough from deep in his lungs. Both guards approached the cage when they noticed his attempts to get their attention.
"The rot has awoken,"
the one with the dog grinned. Artyom threw his head back to see the man's face and whispered with difficulty,
"Drink water."
"A drink?"
The guard with the dog pretended to be surprised.
"What do you need that for? You're just about to be strung up, and all you want is to drink? No, we won't be getting you any water. Maybe that's why you'll die sooner."
The matter was settled, and Artyom closed his eyes wearily, but the jailers apparently wanted to chat with him some more.
"So, you scum, you finally understood who you raised your fist to?"
the other guard asked.
"And they're even rushing you out. It's because of those morons who will stab you in the back with your own knife. Those..."
he nodded at Archom's neighbor in the next cage.
"The whole metro will be full of them soon, and your simple Russian won't even be able to breathe anymore."
The unshaved prisoner looked down. Archom could only find the strength to shrug his shoulders.
"And I smoked that mongrel of yours nicely, too,"
the first guard added.
"Sidorov said that the tunnel was a bloodbath. And quite right. Subhumans. They need to be destroyed. They are our xenophont."
He remembered the difficult word.
"They ruin things. And your old man died too,"
he concluded.
"What?"
Artyom sobbed. He'd been afraid of that. But he'd hoped that perhaps the old man hadn't died, that maybe he was somewhere here in the next chamber.
"Right. He died. They ironed him a little bit, but he up and croaked,"
the guard with the dog said happily, satisfied by the fact that Artyom was finally reacting to them.
"You will die. All your relatives will die."
He could see Mikhail Porfirovich, without a care in the world, stopping in the middle of the tunnel, leafing through his notepad, and then repeating this last line with emotion. What was it again? "Der Toten Tatenruhm." No, the poet was mistaken. There aren't any acts of glory anymore. There isn't anything anymore. Then he remembered how Mikhail Porfirovich had missed his old apartment, and especially his old bed. Then his thoughts started thickening, and were flowing more and more slowly, and then they stopped altogether. He rested his forehead against the lattice again, and with a dulled mind he started looking at the jailer's sleeve. A three-pronged swastika. Strange symbol. Looks either like a star or like a crippled spider.
"Why only three?"
he asked.
"Why three?"
He had to tip his head towards the man's armband so the security guards would understand what he meant.
"Well, how many do you need?"
the one with the dog answered indignantly.
"There are three stations, you fool. It's a symbol of unity. And just you wait, when we get to police, we'll order forth." "What are you talking about?"
the other guard interrupted.
"It's an ancient symbol, a primordial Slavic sign. It's called a solstice. It belonged to the Fritz, and then we took it over. Stations, you pothead!"
"But there's no more sun anymore."
Artyom squeezed out the words, feeling as though there was a muddy veil over his eyes, and his sense of hearing was disappearing into the haze.
"That's it, he's gone mad,"
the guard with the dog announced with gratification.
"Let's go, senor, and find someone else for a shot."
Artyom didn't know how much time had passed while he sat there deprived of his thoughts and his vision. He occasionally regained consciousness and understood vague images, but everything was saturated with the taste and smell of blood. However, he was glad that his body had taken pity on his mind and killed all thought, and so released his sense of reason from melancholy.
"Hey, brother,"
his neighbor shook his shoulder.
"Don't sleep. You've been sleeping for a long time. It's almost 4 o'clock.
Artyom tried to surface from the chasm of his unconsciousness, but it was difficult, as though lead weights had been attached to his feet. Reality came to him slowly, like the indistinct outlines on film that has been placed in developing solution.
What time is it?
He croaked.
3:50,
the black-eyed man said. 3:50. They'd probably come for him in about 40 minutes. And in 1 hour and 10 minutes. 1 hour and 9 minutes. 1 hour and 8 minutes. 7 minutes.
What's your name?
His neighbor asked.
Artyom.
I'm Ruslan. My brother was called Ahmed, and they shoot him straight away. But I don't know what they do with me. My name is Russian. Maybe they don't want mistake.
The black-eyed man was happy that he finally managed to start a conversation.
Where are you from?
None of this was of interest to Artyom, but the chatting of his unshaven neighbor helped him to fill his head. It didn't matter what it was filling it with. He didn't want to think about Vidyenko, he didn't want to think about the mission that he had been charged with, he didn't want to think about what was happening in the metro. He didn't want to.
I'm from Kievskaya, you know it? We call it sunny Kiev.
Ruslan smiled, showing a row of white teeth.
There are lots of my people there. I have a wife, children, 3 children, and the oldest one has 6 fingers on his hands, he added proudly.
Something to drink. Just a mouthful. Even if it's tepid, he wouldn't mind tepid water. Unfiltered even any water. A mouthful. And to be forgotten about again until the escorts come to get him. He wanted an empty mind again, and not to be bothered. He wanted his head to stop spinning, to stop itching, to stop his thoughts from telling him that he'd made a mistake. He didn't have the right to do what he did. He should have gone off, turned his back, covered his ears, carried on. Made it from Pushkinskaya to Chekhovskaya, and from there it was just one transfer, so easy, just one transfer, and it would all have been done, his task completed. He would be alive. Something to drink. His hands had become so numb that he didn't feel them. It's so much easier for people to die when they believe in something. For those who believe that death isn't the end of everything, for those in whose eyes the world is separated into black and white, who know exactly what they need to do and why, who hold the torch of an idea, of beliefs in their hands, and everything they see is illuminated by it. Those who have nothing to doubt and nothing to regret. They must have an easy time of dying. They die with a smile on their face.
We had fruit big like this before. And the beautiful flowers, I give them to the girl for no money, and she give me the smile.
The words reached Artyom, but couldn't distract him anymore. Steps could be heard from the depths of the hall. Several people were approaching, and Artyom's heart tightened and turned into a small nervous lump. Were they coming for him? So soon? He thought 40 minutes would have lasted longer. Or had his devilish neighbor told him that more time was left because he had wanted to give him some hope? No, it couldn't be. 3 pairs of boots stopped at his cage. 2 of them were in spotted military trousers, 1 in black trousers. The lock made a grinding sound, and Artyom only just managed not to fall over as the cage door he was leaning on opened.
"Pick him up,"
someone said. He was grabbed under the arms, and he soared towards the ceiling.
"Break a leg,"
Ruslan wished him as a parting gesture. There were 2 machine gunners, but not those that he'd talked to. However, these were just as anonymous-looking. A 3rd guy with a bristling moustache and watery blue eyes was wearing a black uniform and a small beret.
"Follow me,"
he ordered, and they dragged Artyom to the other end of the platform. He tried to walk himself. He didn't want them to drag him like he was a helpless doll. If he had to leave his life, he wanted to do it with pride. But his legs wouldn't obey him, they buckled, and he could only clumsily place them on the floor, hampering the forward motion so that the man in the black uniform looked at him severely. The cages didn't continue to the end of the hall. The row was interrupted in the middle, where the escalators to the next level down were situated. There, in the depths, torches were burning, and ominous crimson light reflected on the ceilings. There were cries of pain coming from below. Artyom suddenly had a thought about the underworld, and he felt a certain relief when they had led him past the escalators. From the last cage, someone yelled to him, "Farewell, my friend," but Artyom didn't pay him any attention. He could only see a glass of water looming before his eyes. On the opposite wall there was a guard's observation post, a roughly knocked-together table with two chairs, and there was a sign with that symbol which said no entry for black people. He couldn't see any gallows anywhere, and for a moment Artyom had the crazy hope that they had only wanted to scare him, and that they weren't really leading him to his hanging, but they were taking him to the end of the station so that he could be let go without the others seeing it. The man with the moustache who was walking ahead turned at the last archway towards the pathways, and Artyom began to believe in his rescue fantasy even more strongly. There was a small platform on wheels standing on the rails, and it was arranged in such a manner that its floor was level with the station floor. There was a thick-set man in a spotted uniform checking a loop of rope that was hanging from a hook screwed into the ceiling. The only difference between him and the others was that his rolled-up sleeves showed powerful forearms, and he had a knitted hat pulled over his head with holes cut into it for his eyes.
"Is everything ready?"
the man in the black uniform said, and the executioner nodded at him.
"I don't like this construction," he said. "Why couldn't we use the good old stool? Then it's pow."
He punched his fist into his other palm.
"Break his neck. But with this thing, while he's choking, he'll squirm like a worm on a hook. And when they choke, there's so much to clean up afterwards. There's like guts everywhere."
"Enough," the man in the black uniform said. Then he took the executioner aside and furiously hissed something at him. As soon as their superior had stepped away, the soldiers quickly went back to their interrupted conversation.
"So?"
the one on the left impatiently asked the one on the right.
"Okay, so?"
the one on the right whispered loudly.
"I pushed her up against the column and shoved my hand under her skirt, and she turned all soft and said to me..."
But he didn't manage to finish, because his superior had returned.
"Never mind the fact that he's Russian. He transgressed. The traitor, the turncoat, degenerate, and traitors should be painfully punished."
He was encouraging the executioner. They untied his hands and took off his jacket and jumper so that Artyom stood there, only wearing his dirty undershirt. Then they tore the cartridge case that Hunter had given him off the string around his neck.
"A talisman?"
the executioner inquired.
"I'll put it in your pocket. It might still come in handy."
His voice was far from evil, and it was curiously soothing. Then they pulled his hands together behind his back and pushed Artyom onto the scaffold. The soldiers remained on the platform since they weren't needed. He couldn't escape anyway, since it required all the strength Artyom had just to stand there while the executioner fitted the loop over his head. To stand up, not fall and make no noise. Something to drink, that's all that he could think about. "Water. Water.
Water,"
he croaked.
"Water?"
the executioner threw up his hands in disappointment.
"Where am I going to get you any water now? It's not possible, my dear. We're already way behind schedule. Now just be patient, not long now."
He jumped off onto the path with a thud and spat on his hands before taking up the rope attached to the scaffold. The soldiers were lined up, and their commander had assumed a significant and even solemn look.
"As an enemy spy who has viciously betrayed his people," he began.
In Artyom's head there was a dance of thought fragments and images that said, "Wait, it's too early, I haven't yet managed to do what I had to do." And then Hunter's strict face appeared before his eyes, and disappeared immediately in the crimson twilight of the station. Then Sukhoi's tender gaze appeared and vanished too. "Mikhail Porfirovich, you will die. The Dark Ones, they can't wait." And over all this, interrupting his memories, the words, his desires, shrouding them in a stuffy, dense haze, hung a great thirst, something to drink.
"Degenerate who discredits his own nation,"
the voice continued to burble. Suddenly there were shouts in the tunnel and a burst of machine gun fire, and then a loud bang, and everything went quiet. The soldiers grabbed their machine guns. Their superior in black turned nervously and quickly said, "Punishment by death, go ahead," and he gave the signal. The executioner grunted and pulled the rope, planting his feet on the cross ties. The boards slipped away from Artyom's feet, though he tried to keep touching them so that he could stay on the scaffold, but they moved further off, and it was getting harder and harder to stand. The rope was dragging him back towards death, and he didn't want it. He didn't want to die. Then the floor slipped out from under him, and the loop tightened from the weight of his body. It squeezed his neck, cut into his windpipe, and a rattle issued from his throat.
His sight lost its sharpness, and everything was twisted inside him. His body was begging for air, but he couldn't inhale, no matter what he tried, and his body started to coil convulsively, and there was an awful tickling feeling in his stomach. The station clouded with a poisonous yellow smoke, and gunshots roared nearby, and then he lost consciousness.
"Hey, hangman, come on, come on, now don't pretend. We felt your pulse, so you can't feign death."
And he was hit across the cheeks, bringing him around.
"I refuse to do mouth-to-mouth on him again,"
the other person said. This time, Artyom was absolutely sure that it was a dream. The last seconds of unconsciousness before the end. Death was so close, and the moment her iron fist closed around his neck was as indisputable as the moment the floor fell away from underneath him and he hung over the rails.
"That's enough blinking, you'll be fine," the first voice insisted. "We got you out of the loop so you could enjoy life again, and you're rolling all over the floor on your face."
Someone shook him hard. Artyom shyly opened an eye and then closed it, having decided that he was probably in the process of dying prematurely, and that the afterlife had already begun. A being was leaning over him, and it looked a bit like a person, but it was so unusual looking that it reminded Artyom of Khan's calculations about where souls go when they're separated from their transitory bodies. The skin of the being was a matte yellow, which you could even see in the light of a lantern nearby, and instead of eyes, he had narrow slits, as though a sculptor who was sculpting a person out of a tree had almost finished the face but had only made an outline of the eyes, and he forgot to chip open the eyes so it could look out onto the world. The face was round with high cheekbones, and Artyom had never seen anything like it.
"No, this is not working,"
someone declared resolutely from above, and they sprayed water in his face. Artyom swallowed it convulsively and stretched out his hands for the bottle. At first he just held onto the neck of the bottle, and only after that did he get up and look around. He was rushing through a dark tunnel with head-spinning speed, lying on a section car that was no less than 2 meters long. There was a light smell of burning in the air, and Artyom thought with astonishment that it must be fueled with petrol. There were 4 people apart from him sitting on the section car, and there was a big brown dog with a black undercoat. One of them was the guy who had hit Artyom across the cheeks. There was a bearded guy in a hat with ear flaps that had a red star sewn onto it and onto his quilted jacket too. He had a long machine gun dangling down his back, one just like the hoe that Artyom had before, but there was a bayonet knife screwed onto its barrel. The 3rd person was a big fellow whose face Artyom didn't see at once, but when he did, he almost jumped off the car. His skin was very dark. Artyom looked at it a bit more and calmed down. He wasn't a dark one, his shade of skin wasn't the same as theirs, and he had a normal human face with slightly outturned lips and a flattened nose like a boxer's. The last guy had a relatively regular appearance, but he had a beautiful, brave face and a strong chin, which reminded him of something on a poster at Pushkinskaya. He was dressed in a beautiful leather coat, which was tied with a wide belt with 2 rows of holes in it and an officer's sword belt, and from the belt hung a holster of impressive size. There was a Degtyaryov machine gun at the back of the section car and a fluttering red flag. When a beam from the lantern accidentally fell on the flag, he could see that it wasn't really a flag but a ragged piece of material with the red and black face of a bearded man on it. All this seemed more like some kind of terrible delirium than the miraculous rescue that Hunter had made for him when he ruthlessly cut his way through Pushkinskaya.
"He's regained consciousness," the narrow-eyed man said joyfully. "So, hangman, what did they get you for?"
He spoke totally without accent. His pronunciation was no different from Artyom's or Sukhoi's. That was very strange, hearing pure Russian speech from such an unusual being. Artyom couldn't shed the feeling that this was some kind of farce and the narrow-eyed man was only moving his lips while the bearded guy or the man in the leather coat spoke from behind him.
"I shot one of their officers," he admitted reluctantly.
"Well, good for you. You're just the kind we like. That's what they deserve,"
the man with the high cheekbones said enthusiastically, and the big dark-skinned guy who was sitting at the front turned to Artyom and raised his eyebrows respectfully. Artyom thought that this guy must mispronounce words.
"That means we didn't create such a scene for nothing,"
he smiled broadly. He also had a flawless accent so that Artyom was confused and now didn't know what to think.
"What's your name, hero?"
the handsome man in leather asked him, and Artyom introduced himself.
I'm Comrade Rusakov. This is Comrade Banzai.
He pointed to the narrow-eyed man.
This is Comrade Maxim.
The dark-skinned one grinned again.
And this is Comrade Fyodor.
The dog came last. Artyom wouldn't have been surprised if he'd been called Comrade too, but the dog was simply called Karatsyupa. Artyom shook their hands one by one, the strong, dry hand of Comrade Rusakov, the narrow, firm palm of Comrade Banzai, Maxim's black shovel of a hand, and the fleshy hand of Comrade Fyodor. He earnestly tried to remember all their names, especially the hard-to-pronounce Karatsyupa, but it seemed that they called each other different names anyway. They addressed the main guy as Comrade Komissar, and the dark-skinned one they called Maximka, or Lumumba. The narrow-eyed one was simply Banzai, and the bearded one with the hat with ear flaps they called Uncle Fyodor.
Welcome to the 1st International Red Fighting Brigade of the Moscow Metropolitan in the name of Ernesto Che Guevara,
Comrade Rusakov triumphantly announced. Artyom thanked him and fell silent, looking around. The name was very long, and the ending of it generally blended into something quite unclear. For a while, the red color had had an effect on Artyom not unlike its effect on a bull, and the word brigade was associated for him with Zhenya's stories about the gangster lawlessness somewhere near Shabolovskaya. Most of all, he was intrigued by the face trembling on the cloth in the wind, and he timidly asked,
"And who have you got there on your flag?"
At the last second he decided on the word flag, having almost said rag.
"That, my brother, is Che Guevara,"
Banzai explained to him.
"Which Che Guevara?"
Artyom hadn't understood, but seeing rage fill Rusakov's eyes and the mocking smile on Maximka's face, he figured out that he'd done something foolish.
"Comrade Ernesto Che Guevara,"
the commissar rapped the separate syllables.
"The great Cuban revolutionary."
Now the sounds were all more distinct, though it still wasn't intelligible to Artyom, but he decided to widen his eyes enthusiastically and say nothing. After all, these people had saved his life, and angering them right now with his ignorance would be impolite. The tunnel's soldered ribs flashed past fantastically quickly, and during the length of their conversation they had already managed to fly through one half-empty station and stopped in the twilight of the tunnel beyond it. Here, at the side, there was a little dead-end offshoot where they could stop.
"Let's see if the fascist reptiles dare to go after us," said Comrade Rusakov.
Now they had to whisper very quietly because Comrades Rusakov and Karatsyupa were attentively listening for sounds coming from the darkness.
"Why did you do it? I mean, rescue me,"
Artyom asked, trying to choose the right word.
"It was a planned sortie.
Some information arrived," explained Banzai, smiling mysteriously. "About me?"
Artyom asked in the hope that he could believe Khan's words about his special mission.
"No, just in general," Banzai made an indistinct gesture. "We heard they were planning some kind of atrocity, so Comrade Commissar decided we had to stop it. Besides, it's our mission, to bother them constantly." "They haven't put up roadblocks on this side. Not even a bright torch, just a few outposts with simple fires,"
Maximka added.
"We ran over them straight away. Sadly, we had to use the machine gun. But then there was the smoke bomb. We had gas masks, and we took you, our homegrown SS man, and went back."
Uncle Fyodor, silent and smoking some kind of weed in a pipe, the smoke from which started to make his eyes tear up, suddenly said,
"Yes, my young friend, it's good that you were appropriated. Do you want a little brew?"
And picking up a half-empty bottle of some kind of murky swill from an iron box, he shook it and offered it to Artyom. It was going to take a lot of bravery to take a sip. It went down like sandpaper, but he felt as though a vice that had been clamped inside him this last 24 hours had relaxed.
"So, are you Reds?"
he asked cautiously.
"We, my brother, are communists, revolutionaries," Banzai said proudly.
"From the Red Line?"
Artyom leaned in.
"No, just simple communists,"
the man answered a bit hesitantly and hurried to add,
Comrade Commissar will explain it all to you. He's in charge of the ideology here.
Comrade Rusakov, having returned after a few minutes, informed them,
"All is quiet."
His handsome masculine face radiated a sense of calm. "We can take a break." There was nothing with which to build a fire. They hung the little kettle over a camping stove and cut up some cold pork. The revolutionaries ate suspiciously well.
"No, Comrade Artyom, we aren't from the Red Line," Comrade Rusakov declared firmly when Bonzai related the question to him. "Comrade Moskvin has taken the position of Stalin, turned his back on a metro-wide revolution, officially denouncing the interstational and cutting off support for revolutionary activities. He's a renegade, and he's a compromiser. As comrades, we are sticking to Trotsky's line of thinking. You could even draw parallels between Castro and Che Guevara. That's why he's on our fighting banner." And he pointed to the sad, hanging rag with a broad gesture. "We have remained true to the revolutionary idea, unlike the collaborationist Comrade Moskvin. As comrades, we condemn them and their line."
"Aha, and who gives you fuel?"
Uncle Fyodor added, puffing on his rolled-up cigarette. Comrade Rusakov flushed and threw a vicious look at Uncle Fyodor. Fyodor just mockingly tut-tutted and took a deeper pull on his cigarette. Artyom understood little from the commissar's explanation apart from the main thing. These people had little in common with the Reds who intended to string Mikhail Porfirievich's guts up onto a stick and shoot him at the same time. This calmed him, and in an effort to give a good impression, he twinkled,
"Stalin, that's the one in the mausoleum, right?"
But this time he'd gone too far. An angry spasm deformed the beautiful and brave face of Comrade Rusakov. Bonzai turned away, and even Uncle Fyodor frowned.
"No, no, it's Lenin in the mausoleum,"
Artyom hurried to correct himself. The stern wrinkles on Comrade Rusakov's high forehead smoothed out, and he said severely,
"You still need lots of work, Comrade Artyom."
Artyom really didn't want Comrade Rusakov to work on him, but he restrained himself and said nothing in reply. He really understood little about politics, but it had started to interest him, and therefore he waited until the storm had passed and ventured,
"So why are you against the fascists? I mean, I'm also against them, but you guys are revolutionaries after all."
"Those reptiles. Because of Spain. Because of Ernst Thälmann and the Second World War."
Comrade Rusakov spat through his clenched teeth, and though Artyom didn't understand a word of it, he didn't want to make a show of his ignorance yet again. Once they poured boiling water into the mugs, they all became more lively. Bonzai took to exhausting Uncle Fyodor with foolish questions, obviously trying to tease him, and Maximka, having sat down closer to Comrade Rusakov, asked quietly,
"So tell me, Comrade Commissar, what does Marxism, Leninism say about headless mutants? It has bothered me for a long time. I want to be ideologically strong, and I am drawing a blank on this one."
His dazzling white teeth sparkled in a guilty smile.
"Well, you see, Comrade Maxim," the commissar replied after a delay, "this, my brother, is not a simple matter."
And he started thinking hard. Artyom was also interested in how the mutants were seen from a political point of view, and indeed he was interested to learn if they existed at all. But Comrade Rusakov was silent, and Artyom's thoughts slid back down the track that he hadn't managed to get out of in the last few days. He needed to get to Polis. He was saved by a miracle. He'd been given one more chance, perhaps his last. His whole body hurt. He had a hard time breathing. Deep breaths would set him off coughing, and he couldn't open one eye. He wanted to stay with these people very much. He felt much more calm and confident with them, and the darkness of the unfamiliar tunnel was not condensing around him and oppressing him. The rustlings and scratchings that flew up from the black bowels didn't frighten him, didn't put him on his guard, and he hoped that this respite would last forever. It was sweet to relive his rescue again and again, even though death had been chomping its iron teeth just above his head, barely brushing against him. The sticky, body paralyzing fear that had seized him before his execution had already evaporated. The last remnants, hidden under his shirt and in his stomach, had been burnt out by the poisonous homebrew of the bearded Comrade Fyodor. Fyodor himself, and the friendly Bonzai, and the serious leather-clad Commissar, and the enormous Maxim Lumumba. It was so easy with them.
in a way that he had never experienced since he'd left Vedienha 100 years before. None of his belongings were in his possession anymore. The wonderful new machine gun, the 5 magazines of cartridges, the passport, the food, the tea, 2 flashlights, they were all lost, left with the fascists. All he had was a jacket, some trousers, and a twisted cartridge case in his pocket. The executioner had said,